Hi, this is Merrick.
And this is Beth.
This is the UK Idle Thumbs podcast, the sort of sideshow to the circus of the US.
We're in the main attraction, clearly. The melodious tones you probably hear behind you are not our choice. It's because we're in the local pub right now, recording the intro for the podcast we just recorded.
Yes, in which we discuss MMOs at great length. So if you hate MMOs, you should probably skip ahead.
We're then joined by my girlfriend, Risaka, and we talk about Pokemon and Metal Gear Solid.
Yes, in general, actually, Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, at the end there's a special bonus, which we recorded on New Year's Eve, in which we're joined by our friends Ben, who works at Sony and used to work on Idle Thumbs, one of the co-founders, and also Lawrence, who works at Beatnik Games, an indie games company, who has been on this podcast before. And we pitched a bunch of stupid games.
Really stupid ideas, but
they're retarded. But they're at the end, so if you hate MMOs, Metal Gear Solid, Pokemon, you can skip right to them. Anyway, so this is the UK Idle Thumbs podcast.
Hope you enjoy it. Talk about MMOs, because you've been playing an MMO and I've been playing an MMO a little bit, and we could sort of compare notes.
Because you're kind of an MMO noob,
noob? No, I've played quite a few MMOs. Well, not a lot MMOs, but I've played some MMOs intensively.
I think with MMOs, yeah, you play some.
Yeah.
A lot, rather than many for a little bit.
Exactly. I've played a few, but then I made it a point to not play MMOs for, I think, 2 years or so, because I was just, I felt like a waste of time, to be honest.
If you get that in your head that you're wasting your time, and really it's quite easy to do that.
Yeah.
And money, then.
Well, yeah.
So what MMOs, or MMO are you playing?
Oh, right now it's EVE Online. I'm doing the trial just now. I haven't subscribed to it yet, but I wanted to check it out. Mostly for sort of research purposes, because, you know, in game design I do a lot of online stuff, so EVE is kind of a game you should know about.
I never actually played it directly. I kind of watched a lot of people playing it, and it just looked... The entire investment to kind of begin just seemed too extreme. Like, great big... a galaxy or whatever, and you're kind of just going to have to mine a planet for 7,000 hours. Before you can join up and with a big force and kind of go around the galaxy destroying everyone, or, you know, or the kind of action that some people see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was told that I should expect this sort of hardcore, you know... virtual world where anything is possible, and you know, the learning curve is really tough and whatever. So I was already kind of prepared for that, and still it surprised me how, you know, complex that game is. It just punches you in the balls, you know, there's tutorials in the game. I went through a lot of the tutorials, but even then you just feel so lost, because everything is immediately available to you. You can do anything. You can research shit, or you know, the whole contracts screen with all the options for it is immediately available to you, and the markets, and with all the sort of historical graphs of the prices of certain items and all that complex shit.
So they don't, like, you know, immediately, you know, they don't like streamline it or narrow it down and give you a small bit at a time.
No, they don't funnel it at all, which frustrates me quite a bit, because. Okay, on the one hand, I think the developers of this game are awesome, and their attitude towards their game is awesome in the sense that they say, okay, this is a niche title, to hell with anyone who doesn't like it. If you like it, great. If not, then, well, whatever, this is hardcore. This game is meant to be hardcore, and, you know, we're not going to sort of make it easier for you or whatever. But on the other hand, I think... there's some obvious things that they could do to actually make it a lot easier for people to jump in, and they're not doing it. Maybe, like you say,
the thing about EVE, which is lucky for them, is like they've got their hardcore audience and they've got like the right number of them. I think today I just saw they had an online concurrency of something gigantic, like 40,000 or something.
40,000 was 40, when I logged in yesterday. Yeah.
And so they can keep that kind of concurrent thing, and they're not really losing subscribers. They're just keeping their fan base.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense to just keep them happy.
And then grow slowly. I mean.
And then obviously try and get more people into the game, but
yeah.
If you can just keep that fan base there, then you're going to make your money.
Yeah.
And they're doing fine, although apparently they might have to leave Iceland.
Yeah. Oh, man. Sadly, the entire economy collapsed around them. And now they're lobbying directly with the Icelandic government to, I think, allow them to get more foreign currency and change the law, actually. Because, basically, they employ a large portion of the Icelandic population.
It's not exactly a giant place, is it? No.
Yeah. But it's anyway, funny,
that Icelandic thing was also wasn't it the reason that Gamecock changed hands or whatever?
Yeah, Gamecock was sold to South Peak Interactive of all publishers because they had all their money in Iceland. Yeah, as far as I know.
Anyway,
So what I wanted to say, so I had some friends in Amsterdam, and I've heard from some people here as well about sort of the high level content in EVE Online, which sounds amazing. Like, you can read these fantastic stories as well from, some of those new game journalism writers in PC Gamer, I think. And there were just stories about what was happening in EVE Online, the political intrigue, the guilds and factions and all that stuff, or the corporations.
There's a couple of like really famous ones.
The heists and
people robbing other people and them and destroying them from within and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're amazing.
I think that's brilliant. And I can imagine that if you get to a certain point in that game, it becomes really cool because you're not relying on the content of the game, you're relying on the gameplay systems. You use, for instance, the contracts screen to make... To sort of farm things out for your corporation to other people or whatever. Or, you know, you use the markets to trade or all those kind of things. And I think that's a really big strength of online games, potentially. Those kind of community-based online things where there's groups of people doing stuff. But I'm sad that it takes, in that game, a very long time to get there. And you need to do a lot of traditional grinding to actually, you know, struggle your way towards the top.
The cool thing is, I think, that as you were saying before, people, when they get to the end of the game, they're no longer relying on the game content, but in a way they're making it, because in the game you're not really relying on built-in factions or dungeons or whatever. It's kind of becomes based around which or guilds or whatever they're called in
corporations,
which corporations control certain areas and how they behave and you know, if they tax you, I don't know stuff, but it's...
These things, to me, are usually a lot more interesting. I played this sort of obscure MMO called Ragnarok Online, which most people don't know. I think it's like some stupid Korean thing. It was an alpha and beta, and I played it when it was free a couple of years ago. And there were these markets created by the... like these flea markets or whatever, created by the designers with stalls and like NPC vendors. And what was amusing to me was that these areas were completely empty at most of the time. No players were really going there. Sometimes someone would go there and buy his thing and just move out immediately. But there were these areas, these sort of crossroads in the game where people were just naturally, they would just pass that on the way to quests. And it was just full of actual people selling stuff. And it was just this crowded sort of marketplace that sort of emerged naturally on one of these sort of random places. And these were just fascinating areas because people were putting up, like, they were using actually chat bubbles to make signs, like selling what, you know. And sometimes there was a scammer, and then someone would make a chat bubble next to him with an arrow sign saying, "Scammer, you know, don't buy from this guy." And it was a very vibrant place. And I thought it was funny how the designed area was empty and a player emerged.
I guess that's like looking at how real marketplaces evolve and
yeah.
why they evolve in reality, and it will often be, you know, towns will be built around that thing. So exactly. Putting it in, off to the side somewhere is pointless because...
Yeah, exactly. I wish that more online games would give players a little bit more influence on the world, not complete control, because then it becomes just, you know, chaos. Look at Second Life, then you have whatever, penis cities. Oh, slang games. But, you know, give them some margins to work with, and maybe there'll be more market stalls in this location and less in that one, because players go there naturally or whatever, you know?
Funny you say that. I was reading today on, I think, WoW Insider about a certain realm, where a role-playing realm, where this one clan, I guess, has organized a craft fair, where at a certain time... on that server, they're all going to be in a certain place, all the different crafters and all the different people, and they'll be there like all day, and you can go down, really? And you can get anything you want crafted, and there's going to be people selling food and drink and things like that, and they've like made themselves a little fair.
That sounds awesome.
Which is nice. In the article they even discussed, you know, how cool it was and how to encourage that. Their idea was, why not give buffs to crafting certain things at certain times in certain places. So for instance, Sunday morning 7 till 12 down in the Undercity, if you're there and you're crafting for people and selling stuff, then you could get a bonus, and then it would encourage there to be like a fair there every Saturday.
Yeah,
but a user made fair.
Yeah, and it's an indirect way of
stimulating. Right, so you're like, yeah, exactly, you're stimulating it, but you're not controlling it, saying this is where you must have it.
I'm very interested in this. Actually, I've been sort of researching and thinking about this for a couple of months now, and, you know, before that, working on kind of these sort of social architecting type things, where you use gameplay mechanics to actually indirectly create community. Sort of, you rely on emergent things from the player community, but you kind of are like a gardener. You plant seeds here and there by creating these systems, which will encourage it in certain places and not in others, and so on. I think that's very interesting, and I wish more MMOs would do that a bit more, actually.
Yeah, definitely. People, I don't know. It is very interesting how different areas will become known for different things.
Yeah.
Especially things like PvP in WoW, going back to WoW, another example there is there was a certain area back in the old days before they had battlegrounds or certain instanced PvP zones, when there was just world PvP. There was two little towns, and they're really tiny on the grand scale of things, but they're really close to each other. Taran Mill and South Shore, I believe they're called.
Okay.
And because they were so close to each other, they would cause such contested grounds, and everyone questing the same area, like a small fight would just escalate into the biggest war just across in this tiny little field. And it was really awesome, because you could just kind of run over there and get involved in this war. It would just go back and forth between these little towns. You know, sometimes they might get all the way over, and once you get in the town, like, kill all their NPCs, like, kill all the quest givers and the people in the pub and stuff, and dance on the grave. But then immediately it would go back and be pushed back into your town, and it would happen to you, and you'd be really annoyed. But then as soon as they made, like, instance PvP areas, that disappeared from the world. That was gone. And that's often talked about in WoW circles, and that it's a shame that that happened.
Yeah.
But no one... I mean, everyone likes having the PvP zones and things, but it's sad that that had to take that away in order to have a specific kind of battleground area.
It's interesting how the geography of the game can affect so many things. Like when I played WoW, this is a while ago, but I played as an elf, I think, and I sort of started in this...
The night elf.
That island area or whatever, that sort of secluded area... No one went to that city. I mean, it was just full of noobs who just started there, like me, but none of the higher level players just went there because everyone is in whatever, Ironforge or...
The main reason for that was that, one of the main reasons was the auction houses for each side were only in one capital city for Horde and one for Alliance. It wasn't in that one. And they added it later, and it's a bit busier now, but it's still a bit dead because there's no real reason to go back there.
Yeah, and it's out of the way, and it's sort of...
But there are a lot more people there.
Mm.
People that just, like, choose to be there because it's nice, pleasant.
It's a cool area. I agree. But you've been playing the latest expansion, right? I'm saying this I forgot the title of the
Wrath of the Lich King.
Yeah, there you go. See, I'm in touch with the gaming.
I've been playing it, but not enough. Like, I had my level 70, and I wanted to take her into the new realms, and I did for about an hour or so, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
But then I decided to make a Death Knight, and that was triple awesome. That the Death Knight, is, you can make one if you have a level 70 character already.
Mm.
You can make one and start at level 55 with this character.
Oh, that's cool.
I think one of the reasons behind that is, well, one, they're a hero class, but two, a level 1 Death Knight doesn't make any sense because they're meant to be really hardcore. But you get this really awesome storyline that I was really into because it's so lore heavy that you kind of appear and immediately you're talking to the Lich King himself, Arthas, who's been in WoW lore for a long time. He was in Warcraft 3, the prince that turned evil and blah, blah, blah. And he's giving you quests, and for once in the game, you're evil. I mean, there's Horde and there's Alliance, and one's technically good and one's bad, whatever, you know, good and bad sides, but they're not really, it's ambiguous.
Yeah.
But in this one, you really are a jerk, and you have to go and kind of do the bidding of the Lich King, and there's loads of other people doing the bidding of the Lich King, like army of skeletons, and you're just fucking killing everyone. Killing innocent people, torturing them. There's a quest where you get given this guy's special torture swords that you have to go and inflict pain on people until to give up the secrets or whatever, and just going around kind of smacking people.
Nice. That's right up your alley.
But that stuff was really cool, and like when you died, instead of having to do the corpse crawl thing, run back to your body, a winged, great big Valkyrie angel thing came down and just rezzed you.
Right.
Because it was in the middle of this siege of this town, the Lich King and his flying fortress over a great big human town just raining down fire and chaos, and all of his Death Knights attacking. And it was really cool to be part of that.
How was this, I'm sorry, was this instance content?
No, this is not instance. This is the starting zone for a Death Knight. This is the first thing you do when you start this new character.
Okay.
You start off and you report to the Lich King. Basically, the idea is you've been newly resurrected to fight for him.
Okay.
As a kind of undead entity, kind of. And he sends you out to kill. But it kind of instances, they have a new phasing technology, so that when you've completed quests up to a certain point, and for instance, this one is attacking a town, and as you progress through the quest, the town, excuse me, is slowly burning down. Like, if you get to a certain point and you use all the guns and you win that thing, then it phases the entire land for you. So all of that area is now burned down and no longer enemy territory, but your territory. But it isn't instance, because if you meet someone who's doing another quest that's lower you, it just looks different to them or something. I'm not really sure
how. Whoa, so there's different versions of reality.
Yeah.
That's a bit weird.
I know. I don't really understand quite how it works, but I know that it isn't fully instancing it out, so you're in a separate place. You're still in the same world.
Yeah.
It's strange, though.
Yeah, there's always a sort of disparity between, like, MMOs, when they try to do storytelling things, it usually, there's a sort of
it
disconnect,
can fall
right?
down quite
yeah.
hard, like
There's the basic stuff where you are sent on a quest, you are the hero, and you have to save the blah 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 from the blah blah blah. It's been there for centuries, go get it. And you go there, and there's a guy jumping around like, hey, I just got the thing! Oh, well, yeah, you looking for it? It's
even
over there.
More than that, though. I mean, it's kind of stupid and doesn't work. For instance, with this new patch, everyone who's level 70, well, not everyone, but the hardcore people who are level 70 and had finished all the high-end dungeons and had finished the storyline of Burning Crusade and killed Illidan, who was the big boss of that one.
Yeah.
They've got to that point in the story where it now continues. But if you make a Death Knight and you start at level 55, once you finish your starting zone, you have to go back and do all the previous expansion content in order to level up before you can go to the brand new expansion. At which point you're kind of put back in time, story-wise.
Ah, yeah.
So it kind of falls down, you just have to ignore it.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Like,
this
it goes
is a weird
back in
theme
time.
Park feeling, where there's a world, it's actually not sort of, it's kind of a static thing in a way, because you keep going into these rides, which are these instances, and you're supposed to sort of forget that they're sort of these experiences you can have anytime, and suspend your disbelief, I guess. But
WoW is very good at not actually instancing you ever in the main world. Only when you go into a dungeon which requires like a 5-man or a 10-man like thing, when then so it has to be a challenge, and that's the point. Does it instance? Yeah. There are other games though which really annoyed me because you like City of Heroes and Auto Assault did it. In fact, say there were 50 people in a zone, and you went into that zone, you would go into an instance version of the same zone.
Oh, that's horrible!
And you would just be one guy. In the, but you'd be then, in the same place, but you can't see them or hear them.
So you go like, yeah, let's meet in the...
by the sofa or whatever. No, you're not. Oh, I'm in a different instance to you.
Oh.
That fails. I hate that.
I played City of Heroes, but I never had that problem.
I think they upped the limit massively in City of Heroes, so it really rarely happens.
Okay.
And only, yeah. I mean, because it's very spread out as well, so it's quite rare to happen, but it can. I think you can flip between them. In Auto Assault, you could like see which instance like, you were in and try and join a different.
It's
one.
Like clicking layers away in Photoshop.
Right, it's
like
it's a complete fail. It's meant to be this vast open world, but it's not. Whereas WoW, it never does that.
Okay.
It will just crash instead.
This is nice.
I don't know. Eve only has one server.
Eve has one server.
Instances,
it leads to epic lag sometimes when there's these huge battles, and I hear friends of mine complain about that quite often. But I quite like that it's not so content heavy or content relying on content.
Yeah.
So there's less of that disconnect. It feels more that what you do, you truly are a, not a hero, but you're a citizen in a way. And what you do actually does have an impact. It's recorded in history as something you did.
How do they manage story in Eve? Because, I mean, WoW is a lore heavy thing, you know, where the quests bear resemblance on a written lore of the game.
Lore, yeah.
As in L-O-R-E.
Yeah.
And it follows a storyline, a path. But Eve sounds like it's more kind of generated through the actions you do. Like, you pick up contracts to do certain things.
Yeah. It's more
like
player to player.
Or whatever. Yeah, it's
but
not so much.
Okay, I'm actually not sure, because I could be wrong on this one, but as far as I know, they have this background story, right? And they kind of expand upon it a little bit with each expansion pack. So a new area might be unlocked that has been discovered or whatever, where a new race is sort of fighting. Or
do they have, like, you know...
Because at least that's
NPCs.
What I remember, but I might be totally wrong on this one.
No, I guess we shouldn't really
no.
venture into the territory if you're unsure.
No, but they do have NPCs and stuff like that.
No, I mean NPCs that are, you know, like, famous story-wise...
Mm.
Integral to kind of a
right.
lore.
I'm not sure.
Like,
you
know, like General John Joseph or whatever. Oh, that guy. You know, he fought this thing and won this war and now is leading a...
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Like Adama is in there or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
You know, and you understand who that is.
I suppose, maybe there are. But the famous people in the sort of world of Eve are definitely the players.
It's the players, right?
Yeah. I think there's an interesting contrast between those kind of things and, for instance, Star Wars The Old Republic, which has been recently sort of unveiled. And The Old Republic puzzles me quite a lot because it makes it sound as if it is Knights of the Old Republic, the single-player game, except it's somehow MMO-enabled. You know, it's like you play this story... And you make these choices. I'm like, wait a minute. You make choices that impact the world, but everyone is making choices. Everyone is doing their single player sort of experience, but it's also shared. Or, you know, what's going on here? And they say it's going to be like Knights of the Old Republic times 9, which is sort of...
Yeah,
this,
we talked about this before, how each quest, how each class will have their own entire story.
Yeah.
There's more content in there than any other BioWare game, all of them combined. Or whatever. Which...
But what does that mean, right? To sort of lead
is that
with
good
that
as well,
because in marketing they've sort of made that their
oh
one
that's like
point.
Bullet point, right?
Yeah, it's their one big point right now.
Oh no, they got what they call it fourth pillar.
Yeah,
the fourth pillar.
Storytelling. But I don't think necessarily that MMO should focus on this. They can sort of enhance the world a little bit with storytelling, but should it be the focus of it? I'm not sure. There's, I will say one thing though, I've been reading a little bit more about this game, and one thing I think is very interesting is the fact that you can, in fact, as far as I know, as in the Knights of the Old Republic game, you can have an entourage of characters that travel along with you, which I think is a good idea. Yeah, if like, they do it well.
They've always said that in BioWare, when they're called, but you know, your buddies in your party.
That's... Yeah, like your party of characters. And if everyone in the game has one of those, that's good, because it creates a bit more contrast between you, the hero. I mean, MMOs are always, you're a hero, but then you discover that you're not a hero at all, because everyone's a hero, so no one's a hero.
You know what had those?
And
Guild Wars.
Ah, really?
Guild Wars had henchmen, initially, who were kind of just boring... They didn't really do much. You know, you pick them up and they just help you. And you could use them if you wanted to basically solo, but you could fill your whole party with henchmen of various kinds. But then they introduced, like, hero henchmen. I don't know much about them. I do know that they were far more, like, involved. And would follow you around and have a story and talk to you. And so that exists. And it works cool.
I wouldn't really use them to fill up slots if you were...
No, that was the initial idea, I think. But
I think if you, if you're making a Star Wars MMO and you have this feature, what I would say is basically make it so that none of your helper dudes can be Jedis, for instance. Or Jedi is, I think, is Jedi the...
Jedi is probably the plural of Jedi. Whatever. I don't know. 50 Jedi.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, no one cares.
But well, yeah, I love Star Trek.
You play through KOTOR because you did have Jedi henchmen, and often they were better than you.
No, I know.
For
exactly.
a while, you know, at the beginning, you'd have a like. You need like the Obi-Wan character, for instance, who's you know better than you, the old Wizen.
And it's kind of lame, actually, that you have these. Well it works in a single player game. It works. In a multiplayer environment, I would say, okay, no one can be in your group can be Jedi, because then you actually make it look like the world is not full of Jedi, which is the problem, I think, with Star Wars Galaxies for a while.
Said that you can play a non-Jedi?
And, possibly, but...
Can you play a non-Jedi in KOTOR?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think so. Nope. I don't know about Old Republic, but KOTOR, no.
They're going the opposite way of like Star Wars Galaxies, where no one was a Jedi until later on when they
patched. Yeah, would have made it really rubbish. Hard.
And they didn't make it really hard. It was lame. You just had to become the master of every. You could multiclass, and you had to just max every one, and then you were a Jedi.
See, that's I think it was rubbish. That's kind of stupid. I think you should be the Jedi guy, and the other characters that are along with you are whatever. They're your weapons specialist dude who will repair your ship. Is like you can level up their
droids,
specific skills,
love interest, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, there you go. And you have a sort of this family of characters, basically your alts.
But if you can switch into being them like you could in KOTOR, it changes the game quite a lot, because instead of having one character, you have a
ton. That would be
and then it makes it
massive implication, but could be interesting. Yeah,
it changes the game somewhat, because then it's even more of a single player MMO than it already sounds.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you'd never have to group, which is a core element of MMOs.
I would definitely make them grunts, like kind of the guys who you send in for specific.
So when you did group, you'd have like 5 Jedi and a whole ton of NPC plus dudes as well.
Yeah,
why not? Maybe. I mean, I don't know if that works.
5 pilots, 2 Wookiees.
This fourth pillar crap. I think it's really ignorant of them to say, you know, MMOs are these 3 pillars, and we're introducing this fourth pillar story.
Yeah.
I think that's completely ignorant, because I don't think, if you're saying that MMOs, and I'm going to specifically go with the one that I play most, which is WoW, you don't have a story, then you're fucking wrong. Because WoW has a huge ass story. There's a cat mirror outside the door.
Would you just let her in?
No. Anyway, what I was saying before the interruption of the door...
Yes.
There was a cat outside. I removed it.
Yes.
Yeah, WoW has a huge ass story, and it's just... Maybe it's not the most important part of the game. It's important if you want it to be there. But if you don't want it to be there, you can completely ignore it and just, like, go, accept all the quests, and then kind of look at the summary, or look at the quick thing that just says, 40 beasts, 20 heads... You know, go meet this guy, and you can just do that stuff in order to level up and get your ship, because maybe PvP is the game for you.
Right.
If PvP is the game for you, then you don't want a story. Now, for instance, you were saying storytelling MMOs. If you look at something like PlanetSide, there's no story to the MMO other than the background, which is like ridiculous and insane, which was like three factions are an internal struggle of war that they can never win. Right. That's the end. That's all you need to know. Like, you need to know the background of each one, like the rebelling underclass and the overlord alien.
These typical archetypes.
But then realistically, you're making the stories and you're making war stories. Yeah. And it's those moments that are remembered, because there's no NPCs in that
They're
game.
So intense.
Not one, unless you count like a computer terminal as an NPC. But when we look back at that game, which we played for several months really, really intensely, we can all just start going on for hours and hours about the time when this thing happened, when we all jumped in a tank and did this. There was an amazing article on Rock, Paper, Shotgun recently, actually, where one of the guys just recounted an epic battle he had. Which is, you actually must read it. It's so good.
Cool.
It was about when there was a bug. So in this game, in PlanetSide, you had three opposing factions, and you had to take over land masses of this world. But your home territory could never be taken over. It was a safe zone. So no matter what happened, even if you lost every island on the whole thing, you could all still respawn in this kind of safe territory, and then all like get together and go through a warp gate to a specific other place and start again from there and start taking over. But there was a bug where no one could respawn there. So people were actually dying out because they couldn't respawn anywhere. And for the first time ever, because normally everything's balanced to around 30%, owned territories. This one race, the Terran, were being wiped off the map permanently.
Wow.
And this guy fought down until like there were only 1% of the global population was his side. And they like fought epically trying to defend this one tiny stupid tower, and they were just completely ass raped by a billion people.
Wow,
that and wiped out, but so fantastic. Such a good story that he has of all these moments in the battle, and you'd remember that kind of stuff so epically, and that has nothing to do with the story.
And that also that is, which is kind of the final thing I want to say about MMOs before we go to the break, presumably. That what you're describing now is to me the opposite of most MMO experiences which I've had, which is basically me sitting in my pajamas at my computer going like click, 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 wow, this is pretty exciting, click, 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 and I'm just sitting there and I'm for 10 hours just clicking shit, or my hotkeyed whatever spells, and grinding, and thinking I'm having a good time, but actually not. And I think there's kind of a misunderstanding about online game design, in the sense that, okay, someone paid to play this for a month, and there's this sort of almost neurotic sort of thing where the game thinks it must give you a month worth of stuff to do. Just, what are you gonna do? Well, kill some rats, add more professions, just heaping on more content to sort of keep people busy. But what I would like to see is experiences that are more intense, that are even experiences you want to repeat because they're so cool. If players want to do more during that month, then whatever, 10 hours of solid good content you give them, or solid good experience, rather, you give them some tools to create it for themselves. Let them make the flea market that only happens on Sunday or whatever, and let them take care of the rest, basically. And I think that would be way cooler, because right now I feel so cynical about MMOs.
I think that you have to get to, with existing MMOs, you have to get to the end game of the MMO before that stuff happens. And that stuff does happen.
Yeah.
My experience with WoW is that you quest and you grind, blah, 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 blah. And when you get to the end game, though, for instance, when I got to 70 with the Burning Crusade, there was still grinding and things to do, and there was still a lot to do, but it opened up masses of new experiences, like you say, that you want to repeat, that are intense, like Karazhan, which is a 10-man raid dungeon, which we went into, the first time I went to, every single person in the raid party I knew in person, and it was like a Friday night, and various other people I spoke to didn't understand why I was going home to play WoW, but in reality I was going home to hang out with 10 guys that I knew, and girls. And yeah, it's
There's girls in this game.
But you have, like, it is really intense, and you need to all cooperate so well, and it's all very scripted, but it's this epic battle, and it takes you God knows how long. Like, most people at the beginning have to do it over several days. You have to go back to it.
Yeah.
And continue it. But those things happen. There's the raids and stuff. But I think it gets to another point then when that gets tired again.
Yeah.
And the 40-man raids and the stuff like that was just, again, like going back to the beginning, or in the, not really the beginning, because at the beginning of an MMO, it's when you're exciting and you're exploring and learning.
It's the middle that is.
And then it's
really,
the middle where it's like, you kind of know what's happening, you've explored a bit, and you're stuck on a bit. The designers maybe got bored of this bit of content because the beginning and the end are so much more important than the middle. But that exists.
Yeah.
The same for things like
It just needs to be streamlined. I think a lot of, if they cut a lot of fat from a lot of these MMOs and keep the bits that are good, people will actually be more excited about it.
Well, like Lineage is almost two games, because there's the game where you level up, and which no one can be bothered to do because it's just too hardcore. Although they patched it to make it easier to level up in that game.
Okay.
It's
still just a
grind core.
Well, it's best, Korean.
But when you get to the end, there's a giant city siege game. But you have to get to the end of that to
see,
be part of that city siege game. You like we have towns and castles that are controlled by factions, and you have wars on those factions, and then you can take control of the castle and be the king.
Give people that. Just
that's great.
Make that the game. Make that the central.
So take away the 1-90 level grind fest.
Yeah.
But then people want different aspects.
Yeah, sure.
I want another planet side. I want it right now.
Yeah.
That game.
From everything I've heard about it, that's an MMO I would play to death. Yeah. I don't think I would play it now, but, you know, because it's old and, I don't know, no one plays it anymore, presumably. But
there is still a hardcore of players that recently, they made it free to play. They keep doing it every now and again.
Oh, really?
Like, if you ever had an account, then it was free for like a month. Every now and again they do this. To try and get you back, I guess.
Yeah.
So I went back to have a look with a friend, and I played a little bit, and it was fun, but it was sad.
It wasn't
it was
the
so
same
quiet.
Anymore.
It wasn't. I mean, it was still
okay,
really quiet.
Yeah.
And instead of being, you'd look on the global map before and see maybe like 5-6 wars happening, and then some smaller ones, and you choose where to go. Now there was just kind of one bit of action you could head to. But our old guild was still there, and the people were still playing. They're like, hey. It had been like, I don't know how long, 3 years ago that we played this game. They're like, hey, how's it going? We're like, holy fuck. So there's still hardcore people playing it.
Right.
But I guess we should take a break.
Yeah,
we haven't in any way covered MMOs.
Anything else? What?
Oh, no, like, there's so much more you could talk about.
Oh, yeah, sure.
MMOs.
Yeah.
So much more. Casual MMOs.
So look forward to 10 more podcasts about MMO.
The Out of Thumbs MMO podcast. Well, let's get another beer.
Right.
So we're joined now by Arisaka. Say hi, Arisaka.
I was going to say hi. You don't have to tell me to say hi.
Yeah, I thought it would.
You probably should start again. Sorry.
It's fine. Arisaka had a job interview today.
Oh, yeah.
There's a game designer. So, did that go well?
Yeah.
Riveting stuff.
Yeah, let's not talk about that in case I don't get the job.
So, Pokemon.
Pokemon's really good.
Yes.
Tell me about your Pokemon.
Well, I have several Pokemon, but what was it? Not Pokemons.
It's Pokemon.
Pokemon.
America's been misled into believing that the plural of Pokemon is Pokemon, and the singular is in fact Pokemon.
Yeah.
I believe.
Pokemon.
But you've bought Pokemon, right? You've ventured into.
Yes, I got Pokemon Diamond, and I've always sort of been aware of Pokemon, but I never played it.
You've been aware of Pokemon.
Then there was this sort of dinner party we were at a while ago where everyone was talking about Pokemon, and
man, what a dinner party!
What the hell?
It's a Pokemon dinner party.
Holy shit! And like, people were fist bumping each other. Oh, I was fist bumping Bob for liking Snorlax. So
I remember that. Actually. That's the only Pokemon I know. Snorlax is the best, but Psyduck is the best.
Yes. No. What? Anyway, so I got it, and I really like it. Actually, the first hour is really cool because it's very fluid in how you kind of get started and stuff.
Which one did you get?
I had a Diamond one, Diamond Edition. Yeah. No, it's on really DS. You know, you get to do something, then you get some more text, and you know, these are small things, but they really make it easy for you to kind of get into it. As opposed to, for instance, Zelda on the DS, which it has like 20 minutes of text and bullshit, and I just dropped out of that. But
Pokemon all Zelda games have that.
What?
All Zelda games have that.
Yeah, no, not all games. Not all Zelda games.
The Pokemon nearly always begins the same way, right? It's like kid in town meets a professor. Gives him Pokemon. He then goes away.
Which is weird,
or she then goes off and fights Pokemon in some bushes just up the road.
Yeah, it's a good formula, though.
Yeah, it works.
And so what Pokemon do you have at the moment?
Oh, I have the main dude in my party is one of the penguin one, the blue sort of...
Oh, that was your starting Pokemon?
Yeah.
I can't remember the starting Pokemon. I know that I chose a chimp, a fire chimp.
Yeah, there was a chimp, the penguin... What is his name?
I'm going to say Piplup.
Piplup, yeah. There you go. He evolved yesterday.
Did you feel, were you proud?
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, I don't like it when the main Pokemon evolve. I don't know why, but in all the series of Pokemon games I've ever played, yeah, they just become less cute. Whereas, you know, but not less cute in a good way, like in a really cool way, but less cute in a just, oh, now you're
I agree. I always give my start Pokemon the little thing to hold. Yeah. Well, not always, but in the one I've played the most, it's like never evolve. But you do that to Pikachu, right? Because Raichu is rubbish.
I have not seen Pikachu in the game.
Pikachu is basically, Pichu is a baby Pikachu and it's like a tiny cute thing. And then Pikachu is a big fat, like overweight, chubby version of that. Yeah. And Raichu is like a big, even chubbier fat guy.
You know what really winds me up with Pichu is that I would love a Pichu. I would love to just have a Pichu. Yeah, in reality, of course. Actually, what would you, if you had to have a set of six Pokemon in real life? Which Pokemon?
Well, I've only have about 8 or 9 right now. So
he's only got like Geodude, so he doesn't really know.
Well, Geodude is worse.
You always get Geodude.
No, I haven't.
I saw those and I was like, no, I'm not going to get that one.
You have to catch them all. That's the point.
No!
You didn't get one? You have to get
I tried to resist the...
You've got to catch them all. That's
I'm not doing the chin Pokemon thing.
There's 450 Pokemon.
Is there?
There's about 450 something.
Yeah. Oh. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a lot easier when there was 151.
Let me tell you what my favorite is so far, though.
Okay.
I got the fishing rod, and I sort of got this fish Pokemon, the carp.
Magikarp.
And it does nothing at all except just flap around a little bit and doing zero damage.
No, see, here's the thing. Well, he evolves into Gyarados, and Gyarados is so cool. And I think it's like
level... Don't spoil him.
Oh, fuck.
Everyone knows this. It's not a spoiler. It's common knowledge.
No, like, I was, speaking to Mary about it, I was like, you know, he's clearly going to evolve into the best Pokemon ever.
Yeah.
Because he's so crappy right now, and you're just going to throw him away.
It's obvious,
I think it's around level 17, he just becomes a cool dragon monster, and he's just, he's the best. He's really cool.
So, here's what I don't know, like, Pokemon has this kind of stigma? Is that the right word? I was going to say stigmata, then, which is a different thing entirely.
That
would be horrible. But, it has a stigma that, you know, it's looked down upon as a kid's game. Or, like, really easy.
Yeah.
But what I found when I played was actually the most hardcore, in-depth RPG thing ever.
Yeah. I was surprised by this as well. I thought it was like, I gotta catch them all! Like, all those stupid kids, I don't know, doing the stupid thing or whatever. It's very simple. This is not for me. And then I discovered it was actually... I didn't even know... This is ridiculous, but I didn't even know there was a turn-based RPG, basically, the games.
You didn't know it was a role-playing game at all? You just thought it was...
I thought it was just basically a collectible sort of, battle against your friends.
Oh, like a collectible card game.
Yeah, exactly.
CCG kind of thing.
More CCG
it
style,
is really...
because there is a CCG.
The RPG is hugely epic. I mean, it's kind of, only a kind of skeleton of one. It's not massively in-depth or anything, Morrowind or something, but it's there. There's stories, but... It's really there to lead you from gym to gym until you become a Pokemaster, and
yeah.
I never became a Pokemaster.
But the gameplay is actually so addictive in itself. It doesn't need massive amounts of story.
It can become annoying if you're trying to get somewhere really quickly and you have to go through lots of long, tall grass.
Yeah, long, tall grass.
You just know there's going to be some annoying geodudes. Actually, they wouldn't be in the grass, but whatever.
Yeah, the Pokemon always emerge from the grass, right? There are certain areas that they sort of emerge from. And you have random encounters up the butt.
Yeah. They drive me insane still. But I still invested many hours into, I think, the previous ones on the DS. I don't know what they were. What were they?
Diamond and Pearl.
And that's the DS ones. I meant the GBA Advance ones.
Red, green, and
burgundy.
Blue, and no.
That was leaf green. They were the remakes.
Oh. Yeah, leaf green.
Ones.
There you go.
There's the ones before even that. See, so whatever.
I just looked at the top 20 sales charts at the time, and it was like Pokemon, whatever.
Red,
burn
green,
sienna.
They are almost on that. Chill will be there. Chill. But I invested God knows how long, and you get to just. Some of the things in it are horribly in-depth. Breeding is impossible to understand.
Really? I haven't...
You can get two Pokemon and you can put the male and female ones, because every Pokemon has a sex.
Yeah, I saw
the
that.
Same kind. And you can put them in a facility, like a nursery, right? Because you can... If you put Pokemon in a nursery and then bugger off and come back, they'll level up still, which is a really useful service. But also, if you put them together, then they might have a baby. And then you have to, like, take this egg and carry it around for X number of steps before it hatches. And it will be a new Pokemon. And it will be, aesthetically like one kind of Pokemon, but have the powers of another. A mixed number of powers.
Kind of disappointing.
But planning the kind of thing you want to make, like, oh, I want to make a Pikachu that, can have water attacks or whatever, is not easy.
It goes incredibly deep and incredibly hardcore.
It's
like
got,
only
proper genetic tables and charts and stuff.
Jeez. Like my sisters are, really good at that stuff because they have all these hours that they can invest in like trying things out and breeding different Pokemon.
Are they playing Pokemon?
They do, of course they do.
But
just it's so complex and amazing and I skipped that bit of the game because I couldn't be bothered to get my head around it. But whatever,
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to do it.
One thing in the Pokemon that I play, though, I don't know if they've kept for Pearl and Diamond, is that when you connected to your friends and traded, then you would basically swap data, like getting a sexually transmitted disease almost. Connected with a whole
teaching
bunch of
kids
my friends.
About
STDs.
But if I'd connected with like 10 of my friends and you connected with 10 completely different friends, our data would then swap. And there are certain times in the game, for instance, there are TV broadcasts, and you can watch the TV, and you might see, oh, Spaff won the fishing contest yesterday. That kind of thing would appear, but you'd also get data from other people's games. You might get Rosalka, or you might get one of Rosalka's sisters' data in your game. But the way like Animal Crossing works, like it kind of gives you new cloud formations, and different people immigrate from different towns. It just keeps that data, and it keeps you informed about what your friends are doing, which is kind of cool.
That's cool.
It was just cute, anyway.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's one. Yeah. I've only played for like 3.5 hours right now, so I'm not really deeply into it yet.
Have you got to the first gym?
Yeah, just at the first gym. I need to find a dude who will get me into the gym. Oh, by the way, what I think is really cool, just a small storytelling thingy, but the fact that you have this sort of ADHD friend who sort of runs off all the time and is always like one step ahead of you is kind of cool. Because as a kid,
rival?
You're like, oh shit, my friend already has been to this area. I need to hurry up, And it sort of makes it...
It's your rival, right?
Yeah, your rival,
they call it. Yeah.
He always chooses a Pokemon, if I recall correctly. He will always choose a Pokemon at the start that is the elemental
opposite
superior of your
okay.
Pokemon. So, like, if you choose a water one, he'll choose... Wow, okay. Pokemon
You've got
knowledge.
To remember.
Yeah. Show us your Pokemon
you
grass.
Fancy knowledge.
Grass.
It's probably the same.
Oh, yeah.
Grass type.
Oh, yeah, there's a rock, paper, scissors thing. I discovered that. Yeah, grass beats what?
Wow, you didn't know this?
No.
Where have you been?
So, like, rock, fire, water. What
wow.
is that?
Yeah,
ghost.
Rock, paper,
it's ghost type. I can't remember all this stuff. I'm so such
there's,
a noob.
There's loads of different types.
There's
now,
there's a manual over there, whatever. A guide,
that's
a Brady Games guide. No way, is it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Uh-huh. What?
Well, it'll help.
Yeah.
You can take it.
Oh, this is the saddest.
I'm gonna play some Pokemon. I own Pearl, and you've got Diamond.
Yeah. No, sweet. Pearl is mine.
No, wrong, because I was like, yeah, Mary's playing Pokemon, maybe I'll give it a go. And so I went and found the two carts, and I put them in. I was like, Pearl is pink. It's probably Rosalka's one. So I put Diamond in it and loaded it up. It said, Rosalka, 25 hours. I was like, oh. I was looking around, Pearl, it's about...
Oh.
Ha ha, you had the four pink hours. One.
Well, whatever. I bet my one's got a better elite Pokemon. No, I had like 4 hours. Just disappointed. I was really, really looking forward to that game. Actually, you know what happened with that game? Do you remember? I bought 2 copies of it from eBay really excitedly that never turned up. And then I bought 2 more copies and they turned up, but they were in Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, which I just felt like a fucking idiot for all this. But by the time I managed to get all my money back and send them back on blah, 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 the game was out and I couldn't be arsed anymore. It was like, it just kind of ruined everything.
Aww.
Anyway, that's a boring story.
So, if you had a real-life Pokemon team, who would be in your team? You could have 6 that you carry with you.
He doesn't know 6.
Yeah.
Do you know 6? That's a better question.
Oh, come on, Marek. Everyone knows at least 6 Pokemon.
I don't know their names because I gave them my own names. And see, I would say I will have Douche and whatever I call them.
You call it Douche?
Yeah. I call the Pokemon enough. Douche. I'd probably select them that way. But,
I remember you saying Snorlax was your favorite, hence the fist bump.
Because I saw a picture of Snorlax once on the internet and I thought it was hilarious.
You see, the thing is that Snorlax is clearly based on pandas, right?
Really?
I'm sure he is. He's useless and fat. He's
a sleepy guy.
And he sleeps, pandas.
Sloth, wasn't he?
No, I don't think he's a sloth. I think he's a big sleeping panda. Spig? And doesn't he have the same color thing as a panda?
Green.
The black and...
Pandas are shit.
So yeah, well, here's
Snorlax
what I'm saying.
Snorlax is green.
He's not green.
He is.
He's not.
He's like green and yellow.
Sweet, we're discussing Snorlax.
Well, anyways,
I think that he's based on pandas because pandas are, you know, notoriously useless, lazy.
Really?
They are.
Do you know anything?
Not about pandas, obviously.
They only eat bamboo. That's their massive weak spot
For damage?
For damage.
People who breed pandas have to trick them.
Sex enough.
Yeah, they have to trick them into having sex by getting
how
ugly pandas.
How useless is a species that doesn't have
is
sex?
Is there a video game
it's
where you can
thing.
Trick a panda into having sex?
That sounds pretty good. We should. you got excited.
I was going to say that. Yeah, you know, considering that you hate pandas so much, it's very strange that you like Snorlax. I question whether you would actually like Snorlax if you had one in your party.
Probably when I see him sort of in a gameplay context, I will.
You'll
hate
be happy
him because
you'll recognize him. Like
yeah,
an
maybe.
Old friend.
Maybe.
Steph.
Anyway, because we could talk about Pokemon all day long
and kill all the users. All the users.
The users, readers.
Users.
The readers.
User error. The readers.
Yeah. No, see, because, I've heard people just talk about Pokemon for an hour on end, so I know how this works. I was curious about Metal Gear Solid 4, actually. I want to talk about that, because, actually, I want to hear what Rizalka has to say about it.
Rizalka has been playing it on and off.
Yeah, you have.
Playing it sometimes, watching cutscenes other times, you know, it's...
Yeah. I don't think...
Burn.
It's frustrating because it's really good. It's it's amazingly designed in most aspects. In terms of the gameplay, it's incredible. There's so many different ways that you can complete the game, kind of like any other Metal Gear Solid game, really. You can, you know, choose to sneak through the entire game, you can choose to crawl through the grass the whole way through, or you can shoot everyone in the face.
Okay.
Or, you know, there's multiple routes or whatever that you can
shoot. I tried shooting everyone in the face.
Wouldn't everyone
really
just shoot people in the face if they, you know, they don't have to cross
the
grass?
It's really hard
to win.
It changes the way the game is, because the AI is so intelligent that if you do shoot people in the face, then they react and they will come after you.
In the face.
So, you know... It's easier that way because they die instantly, but whatever.
Okay.
But yeah, if you do shoot people in the face, then the AI will react and then they'll come after you and they'll make it harder in some ways. You know, it's maybe, I don't know, faster to, say, shoot people and cause crap on the battlefield.
Okay, right.
But it takes longer to sneak and more caution. And, you know, I guess it's you can play it differently depending on how you want to play it, how you would rather play it.
Right.
And it's cool like that. And it's kind of, you know, it's nicely balanced and stuff. But it's just... Oh, there's not a good... So many cutscenes! It's so frustrating! Yeah,
it's not that there are so many, though. It's that when, like, the other night you said, oh, I'm just going to go and play Metal Gear Solid. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take a bath or whatever. And I read my book for a while, and then I got out and I came down and... You hadn't actually played the game yet.
Yeah,
and
I it had loaded
40 minutes.
I had loaded my game. It was amazing. The cutscene was so long that there was a save point in the middle of it.
Which is bizarre. Which is, what the hell?
I've never seen that before. I loaded up my save game from where I left off, and it immediately jumped into a cutscene.
I have seen that before, but anyway, hang on.
Oh. Was it Metal Gear Solid 3?
No, I think it was. No, it doesn't matter. I've seen it and it annoyed me, but it wasn't for the same reasons. It was just like, why is there? Anyway, carry on.
Well, I watched this cutscene that it leapt directly into, and it lasted, you know, if I was exaggerating, I'd say about 20 minutes, but I'm guessing it was more like 10 minutes, but it felt a lot longer because it's a boring cutscene where they're talking about silly little plot details that you don't care about.
Yeah.
And then it prompted me to save, and I thought, oh, brilliant, okay, the cutscene's over, we're going to start playing now, and then it just leapt straight into another cutscene, or the second part of the cutscene. Which was ridiculous, and the worst bit was it was so boring, and I think they've acknowledged the fact that people are going to get bored when they're watching the cutscenes, so they have
which
made
is
it
entirely stupid.
It's like
and
just yeah.
What they've done is they've made it possible for in really long cutscenes you can say often you'll be given the option of switching camera views, so you can listen to Snake and Otacon talking, but you can watch security camera footage from somewhere else in the building.
Sweet.
And in this instance, I spent 10 minutes watching, listening to Snake and Otacon talking, but watching a 10-year-old girl cooking herself a pot noodle.
That's awesome.
So she poured... No, it was...
Riveting stuff.
Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. And she poured boiling water from a kettle into the pot noodle, and then she sat there with her, like... elbows
she actually
on the
waited
table.
For it to boil?
She waited for the kettle to boil. But no, it gets worse, because then she poured the boiling water into the pot noodle, and she waited for the pot noodle to cook. And she just watched it while
so,
it was cooking.
So, I don't know.
Why?
Oh, Kojima.
And there wasn't even an in-joke there, or some reward for you actually switching the camera view to her.
No.
Did it have any relevance?
Really...
What is the relevance of the noodles in the girl,
yeah,
actually? Why is there a girl making noodles?
No, I'm thinking that
I think it's a
something.
Symbol for...
I mean, I'm missing a plot point. I don't know. I think it's important to not finish on being completely negative about Metal Gear Solid.
I love Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, exactly.
I really love Metal Gear Solid. And
so,
before, the thing that frustrates me is because before everyone joked about, you know, there being more cutscenes in Metal Gear Solid games than there is gameplay, but I actually believe that I spent more time watching cutscenes in Metal Gear Solid 4 for the first time ever.
Or hiding in a dumpster.
You know, the dumpsters don't even work. They always find you when you hide in the dumpster.
Well, that's because it's obvious. That's the first place I'd look for Snake. Is he in the dumpster? Actually, no, I'd look under the cardboard box. But then...
Yeah, no,
then
you can't
dumpster.
Hide the cardboard box.
So
they're like, oh, there's Snake in the box. Shoot the box.
One of the goons reports to the commander, and the commander goes, did you look under the box? Did you look under the dumpster? No, I looked
dumpster,
there many
oh,
times.
Man, the dumpster.
But yeah, I mean, I guess it's actually a really, really good game. And when there is gameplay, it's really enjoyable. It's really cool. It's I mean, there's even like so many other... things about it that, like, you have an iPod in the game.
I saw that, and that was really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It had what they called the Integral podcast, where you download, where you listen to a podcast on your iPod in the game. So I guess when you're hiding in the dumpster, you can listen to this podcast of, like, it's not Kojima, but it's some other guys, I don't know who they are, but it's from Japan, in Tokyo. They did it, like, weekly, apparently. They call it the Integral podcast. I think they meant integrated, as if it's in the game. I don't think it's integral to the game. I don't know.
Wait, so these are just developers who are...
Yeah, and then
what
they talk
about,
like, the making of Metal Gear Solid. They have interviews. You also, like, as I was saying, what, you find songs
you can
in the
find,
game?
If you explore, you find special hidden, say, songs for your iPod. And it will be, say, tracks from the first Metal Gear Solid game or the second one. And you can the really cool thing about them is that you can listen to them while you're hiding. And I spend a lot of time hiding.
Yeah, so. Yeah, this is just an in-game jukebox. But at the same time, as you're saying, I watched you kind of hide under a shack for about 10 minutes whilst guys were like, "Wait, where's your gun?" or whatever. And so I guess you need a bit of entertainment.
Listening to my podcast.
Man.
Yeah.
So, see, I'm always conflicted about wanting to play. I've never really played it. I've only watched some people play it for a little bit. And there's always, like, on one hand, there's those overblown cutscenes with, like, that bullshit about new weapons and the military industrial complex and whatever.
More than that.
Like, what the fuck is this about?
Paradoxes and weird flashes of your memory and over-the-top crap.
And on the other hand, there's all that random shit, the sort of funny shit that Kojima puts in or whatever, that makes me want to play it.
It's so hilarious.
Like, the jokes that sort of reference the little exclamation mark that,
right, that guy with the shaved exclamation mark in his head.
Yeah.
You're telling me? Like,
yeah, for
he's
instance.
He's asleep in the class, and you look from the back of the class, and they're like, yell at him, and he wakes up, and he sticks his head up, and the back of his head is an exclamation mark, and it makes that noise, or whatever it is. Can you do a better impression? Who does the best impression?
I don't know.
What's your one?
Come on.
Fail. I won, then. But I'm with you. I came to the series the other day, and I tried to play Metal Gear Solid 3, but we played it, and we put it on, and after about an hour, we turned it off. Because we hadn't even started playing yet.
I did.
I got into the action, but I ran down a hill, and a guy was like, "There he is!" And then I hid in a bush for a while, and then he found me, and he killed me. I was like, "Oh, that wasn't worth the payoff."
Yeah,
with 4, I do really want to go back to it. I persevered because I hear so much good stuff. People that love it, love it. You know, the people that love Metal Gear Solid, they're just like, they will kill you if you... if you say a bad word. So I was like, fine, I'm going to play this. And I was such a huge noob. I watched Osaka get further than I ever got in about a tenth of the time. It took me so fucking long to get through it. The first thing I did, because it confuses you because it's like cutscene, and then it gives you a bit of control. You're like, oh, sweet, I can play now. And you crawl under a van, and then it goes into another 10-minute cutscene. And it gives you control again. You like run up a street, and then it has a cutscene. I don't know why it does that.
Yeah.
But then when I finally did get control, I was so kind of overwhelmed. I ran up the street, and then a bunch of guys came out of a truck, and I was holding a big machine gun. I was like, panic! And I just fired my machine gun at them all, and of course they all just killed me. Instantly.
Just so, shot them in the face.
So I had to like go back, and I, okay, now I have to crawl through this thing. But I hardly got anywhere, but I was so overwhelmed. But I really, really want to, I really do want to play it.
Cool.
Just, yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 3, by the way, is actually really, really good. It's not nearly as heavy on the cutscenes as 4. Yeah, it was just the start that it takes a while. But then the start of Metal Gear Solid 4 is...
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
It's called Snake Eater.
It's a good name.
Yeah, I know all these facts.
Anyway, I think we should go to the pub.
Yes.
This is Beth.
This is Merrick. Hi.
And we have two fine guests with us today. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I am Lawrence Bishop, and I am...
apparently a farmer.
Yeah, I work for... I work as a programmer for the indie games company Beatnik Games, currently working on our first title.
Playinsightgame.com. Ben?
Yeah, and I am Ben Adak, and... I used to work as a designer at Sega, and I'm currently working at Sony as a games consultant and designer. And even further back, I used to be at Idle Funds as one of the founding members. but yeah, that's good. No relevance.
The relevant part of this segment is that, Ben, you hear game pitches all the time and have some say in whether or not Sony will publish them in some way. And Lawrence, you have an indie games perspective and whether these will work as indie games. The idea of this is that we are now going to pitch you 4 games each. And you have to say whether or not you think they deserve money, whether you will publish them. You're a Sony. You actually have the backing, the clout to actually publish them, be it as a full title or maybe just a
PSN.
Yeah. And Lawrence, you have to give your opinion as well, maybe.
indie games, or maybe you think that you should we should go back to Sony or whatever.
So, four games each. These games have come from random drunken conversation, and basically, up until now, have more or less just been a title.
And they're
so now
the
best
ideas.
We're just basically the best game designers in the world. So
get ready
we have
for
some ideas and
mind-blowing
we think you're
games.
Like them. So I'm going to begin with my game, Cro-Magnon PI. This is a game about cavemen who are private investigators. Well, there's one caveman, he's a private investigator, he's got a big moustache, and he goes around in Hawaiian shirts, and he has to investigate all the crimes in the kind of Neanderthal village. What do you think of that?
I think that fits the kind of...
You like the theme? I mean, obviously there's a gameplay element there right now. Obviously there's going to be maybe a point-and-click adventure...
It's a Professor Layton type of game.
Yeah, maybe it could be like that, it could be puzzles. I mean, it'd be very simple puzzles.
For this starting point, it has the kind of feel of, like, Minotaur China Shop.
Hey!
Ridiculous named thing that you start off with an absurd name and concept, and then you go. You try and figure out something to go from that. So I think that that could be
cool. Yeah. What would it actually like be like to be a Cro-Magnon man in a Hawaiian shirt?
So that's a thumbs up, though. That's a thumbs up, basically, is what you're saying.
So, it needs work, but...
okay, well...
It's a nice start.
I have better ones. It's just kicking off from that point. Mac,
yeah. All right, so Hitman is a very successful title, of course, but I think we can take it in a different direction, more dialogue-based, where you walk around a street and there's people talking and they're having wonderful conversations with each other, and basically your goal is to sort of swoop in and sort of use as a non sequitur or whatever to kill their conversation. And the game is called Conversation Killer. And you have to sort of find all these conversations and kill them. Also, there will be there's sequel potential, which is probably about character assassination. So, all right.
How do you kill the conversations?
You have to select a conversation killer from a list of predefined conversation killers.
Do they come up like far in advance, or do they suddenly come up the closer to get? Like,
yeah,
you could maybe drop a racist joke in the
exactly.
conversation.
It depends
or
on the situation.
So
exactly.
You have to figure out what kind of people are having the conversation.
Yes,
and what the
different
is.
Demographics for different conversation killers.
So it's kind of like when you go, you know, in Assassin's Creed, and when you sit down, you have to like listen to the guy.
Yes,
sit on the bench.
You have to spy on him first.
What's the kind of risk reward? You have to get like close enough to hear enough stuff without kind of making them too aware of your presence.
Well, yeah,
so
no,
you
actually, you have to.
And,
no, it's the opposite. You have to make them aware of you so that they are like, huh, what? And if
no,
you
but
don't
that's
do that,
end.
Well,
that's
enough.
When you drop the killer. But
yes,
like
exactly.
Before that, where you're finding out the information.
When you execute, you need to distract them 100%, or else they'll keep talking, and you won't have killed the conversation, and your mission has failed.
Okay.
Also, you're probably working for some kind of evil genius who wants to kill all the conversations in the world. What do you think?
I think it has the potential, as you say, with the Hitman style, that you could kill the conversation by saying strange things to people, or you. You know, maybe could kill the conversation by killing whoever is talking.
Do you think it could go retail?
You've got the Hitman flexibility.
Do you think we could see that on store shelves?
I think so. I think we could see it on as a digital download, digital title.
Really?
Yeah.
Sweet. That's
right.
Basically one in the bank.
I need $2 million to make this game, actually.
Okay, I have one. I've got one. Going to go the other end of the spectrum now. This is a mass market game. This is big. No one, I mean, let's look at RPGs. RPGs are a geeky thing. They're a horrible thing. It's, you know, it's dungeons and it's orcs and it's seen as a horrible thing that, you know, the average people in the street wouldn't go near. Let's bring it to them. Let's bring the RPG to them. And the way we do that is with the Big Brother tabletop role-playing game. This is where everyone assumes the role of a Big Brother housemate. And one person is the Big Brother. He's the GM, and he runs it. So he sets their challenges, for instance, and they have to compete to be the last member of Big Brother house, or they'll be voted out by some kind of audience.
That sounds like a Wii game to me, so no from Sony.
Oh.
From my perspective, it seems kind of very tie-in, mass market, not really indie scene. So.
No, I wasn't really going for the indie scene. I was hoping Sony might buy it. You know, what with kind of their attachment to Buzz, the music quiz, and there's a big, you know, casual game market. I think that could be quite casual.
I suppose, could you incorporate any peripherals into that? Any kind of...
Oh, a diary room?
with the Sony eye.
Yeah, well, we could use the eye toy and a separate room in which you have to record your diaries back. No, not going for that one. Sure. I'm not doing this well as you, Merrick.
That's a terrible actual pitching process as well.
Need someone with pitching experience. See, what people can see is that I actually have slides in the background that I'm flicking through here with, you know, RPUs and whatever.
R2D2s.
No, it's like average revenue per user and bullshit like that.
Okay, move on.
Oh, not again.
The flashy guy.
All right, so there's these all these casual sort of games about animals, and one of them is My Horse and Me. And I kind of...
Did you say horse or...?
No, well, horse, yes.
Okay.
But here's the twist. Here's the twist. See, I think there should be more edgy titles like that. So My Horse and Me is also, you know, that's I think, a direction you could take it into, where you have to basically be a pimp. And it's a pimp simulator, and you have to groom your horse, and...
Was that horse or horse?
I don't think a pimp has a horse.
Let's just consider them interchangeable right now.
I guess, ride your horse? I don't know. And also, you have to use your horoscope to find...
We're back to the punking.
Oh, yeah.
to find more horse to add to your collection.
This sounds like something that I'd be willing to take on.
You would?
This is very good in the kind of, it's got the kind of the weird niche indie style to it.
Bit on the line.
Yeah, bit edgy.
Get some bad press maybe in the sun.
Jack Thompson might just fuck me up.
He's gone now, we don't have to worry about that.
Oh, yeah, that's
however
true.
He might fuck us up for the next title we have.
Oh,
well, this is a classic adventure game, but adventure games, they've not been getting much audience. They're a bit tame, a bit boring. Mm-hmm. So what if we put them up a notch with Nazi Drew and the Case of the Missing Jews?
This is escalating quickly.
I don't think Sony's going to touch this one. But it sounds very bad, but it's actually a bit more like Schindler's List. She is a Nazi, but she's got a heart, and there's missing Jews, and she finds them and saves them.
What's the actual game? Is it
adventure game, point and click again. Yeah. I'm scrapping Nazi Drew.
That's not really what happens in the pitch, usually, is it?
Yeah.
In the pitch, you ditch the idea. No, sorry, bye.
Yes. Oh, another pitch! Okay, alright, okay. We're sticking to sort of, okay, yes. It's an MMO, it's a world.
This is a good one.
Is it a good one? It is a good one, yeah, I think so. it's kind of like Call of Duty or whatever. It's like there's war going on, there's soldiers going through the battlefield, you know, shooting people and whatever. You are not one of the soldiers. In fact, you are part of a different faction, so to speak. Namely, you are a representative of the International War Crimes Tribunal, and you need to monitor the wars. And if someone commits a war crime, you need to arrest them. And you basically go into the battlefield and go like, you know, get down on the ground! You're arrested for war crimes! And then you take them to the War Crimes Tribunal where they are put on trial, which is a Phoenix Wright-esque sequence. Done.
So it's kind of like a combination of Africa and then Phoenix Wright. So like you go around and take a picture of things and then just
Well, no, and then you finish. It's like cops. Get down on the ground! You're arrested for war crimes like that.
I say there's no investigating, then, so you actually catch him in the act.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's a big war game. It has thousands of war crimes.
Is that a first person game?
It's called World of War Crimes, by the way.
World of War Crimes.
World of War Crimes.
It's a third person MMO experience.
It's an MMO.
Oh, MMO. Yeah, a bit too high risk for an indie studio.
Yeah.
So. Shit. I have to pull out that myself.
Shit is not going as well.
We've got like one in the bank.
What?
One and a half. This one is extremely casual, but it potentially could work as an indie title. I don't think Sony's going to pick this up. It's
stop
a bit
referring to Sony.
It's a bit tame. have you played Where's Wally?
Yes.
Where's Waldo? Imagine that, but imagine tapping into a huge untapped gaming market, the Bible, the Christian market, okay? And you have to find key religious figures in amongst maybe beautiful painted scenes of heaven or congregations in churches. And it's called I Found Jesus.
you're bombing to the I'm max. Bombing.
Yeah. You shouldn't have given me this list.
I think that would be potentially something that Sony could do if it was handled correctly in terms of...
It's a risky...
Yeah, there's some potential objectionable content there for certain parts of the demographic. I'm trying to use long words to just get through this.
It's okay, you can say it stinks.
It sucks balls.
I have only one more game, actually. You know, today I was looking at the New York Times website. This is true. They have an article there about not guide dogs, but other animals that can also be guides, such as parrots. They can, I don't know, people who are lonely, I guess, can have a parrot.
Parrots are people who are lonely.
I don't know. It was a good article. And it also talked about miniature guide horses. So,
miniature guide horses?
Yes.
Where did these come from?
I have no idea, but there was a picture of a lady there at a counter in a shop with a tiny horse standing next to her.
So she had a dog, basically.
What?
Like a dog.
Yes, essentially.
But it was a horse.
But it was a horse.
Can you ride it?
No, it's too small for that, I think.
What's wrong with the dog?
I don't know, it's not a horse. actually, there are reasons why you would have a horse. You can saddle it up and then put your groceries on top of the horse and use it as a donkey.
The game is
called Imagine Miniature Horses, Miniature Guide Horses with
it's,
a Z. So
at it's the a end. Ubisoft title.
It's a Ubisoft title. And it's basically the same game as every other game in that series, except it has miniature guide horses in it.
Okay.
All right.
But we've decided it's already an Ubisoft title, so
yes,
it could work on PSP.
Yeah. So yeah.
No.
Fuck.
Well,
I think you know who your developer publisher is for that already.
All right, well, I'll go ahead.
We'll speak to them, I guess.
Sweet.
Well,
no one will ever speak to us.
You can speak to Phil Housen at Atari. He's big into casual games.
Oh, yeah, sweet. Yeah. I'll talk to him.
That's the future.
Well, I think we've all learned a valuable lesson there about pitching your games to Sony.
Don't write them on the back of a Bex card.
Nazi.
It's also not often that.
So we've got religion, we've got Nazis, we've got sex, violence, and Big Brother, and
they all sell. Big Brother is a huge license.
This was a shock. I don't know. It was shocking.
You gave me the risque ones. That is what it was.
Yes, I didn't want to touch those.
Well, anyway,
on that note,
thank you very much, Lawrence and Ben. It's still New Year's Eve. And we're going to go and get drunk now.
Yes. Happy New Year, Idle Farmers.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes, happy New Year, guys.
May you have better game concepts
than we do.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Hey, guys. What? So we're still in the pub. They're still playing horrible indie music. He's slamming a door.
Hope you enjoyed those fantastic game ideas.
Why did I get all the really bad ones? Like, I feel like I'm just not as good as pitching games that you, and all of mine were offensive and horrible. But it doesn't matter.
Coming soon from a major publisher, Nazi Drew and Against the Missing Jews, apparently.
Hopefully not.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. As we said earlier, if you have any questions for us or comments, or you want to slate us, call us Nazis.
Call us at video games.
You can actually email us at 0800@videogames.com, and that will get through.
That makes, yep, we'll do that. We'll set that up. Fuck.
Thanks for listening to another UK podcast.
Yes, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks.